A famous writer once said, "Talent alone cannot make a writer. There must be a man behind the book, by birth and quality." As the only major Southern publishing house, Pelican Publishing believes that there is something valuable about our Southern way of life, about who we are, and about this place we call home. Something worth putting down in written word on the printed page for future generations. Pelican Publishing is proud of our contribution to helping preserve the history and heritage and culture of the South. And we welcome submissions from authors new and experienced here at Pelican. Our family of authors includes some of the best-known names in Southern heritage today, plus a whole lot more. So whether it's about history or heritage, travel or trees, cooking or culture in general, if it's about the South, Pelican should be your first choice. Visit our website at epelican.com to find out about submitting your own book for consideration. Pelican Publishing, giving Southern authors a better choice. All right, welcome to another live broadcast here at Dixie Broadcasting, and we're going to have another Pelican Pages segment that's brought to you by Pelican Publishing Company. We do this just about every Wednesday night this time, and we're going to do that again. I'll introduce our guest in just a moment, but I hope that our listeners all over the internet land there are enjoying listening to Dixie Broadcasting. The radio station has really been having tremendous listenership for the last 6 months now. It has surpassed everything that we've done in the past as far as total listening on the radio station, and the station just continues to grow, and that's because of you, the listeners, passing along the word to other folks, and we hope you'll continue to do that, and we hope you'll continue to tell people about the Pelican Pages segments right here on Dixie Broadcasting. Tonight we are joined in the studio over the telephone line with Mr. Darryl Selmeyer, who is the author of a new book from Pelican Publishing entitled Joe Shelby's Iron Brigade. And Darryl, thank you for being on the show, and welcome.
Thanks a lot, Ray. It's good talking to you.
Well, I suppose one of the first things we ought to do is let folks know that while they're listening to the interview, they can actually take a look at your book, and they can even purchase the book online from Pelican at a reduced price on the Pelican website. Folks, if you're interested in taking a look at this book while we're discussing it, you can go to the Pelican website at epelican.com. And there at the top of their website, there will be a browse button. You can click on that and just type in the title of the book, Joe Shelby's Iron Brigade, or any part of that title, and or the author's name, Darryl Selmeyer. And Darryl, I'm going to spell your name for folks because I don't know if everybody would get it right or not.
Well, it's kind of a long German name, so go right ahead.
It is, and that's okay because I have a long Scotch-Irish name. Darryl is D-E-R-Y-L. And Selmeyer is S-E-L-L-M-E-Y-E-R. So Darryl Selmeyer is the author, and the title of the book is Joe Shelby's Iron Brigade. And Darryl, in getting started, tell us, if you would, just a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and maybe a little bit about your roots.
Oh, I'd be glad to. I've spent my life here in around the Kansas City, Missouri area, except for about 5 months, and I was in down in Texas in the Air Force for a while on active duty with them. As far as my roots, my father and his parents grew up in or lived around central Missouri along the Missouri River in a county called Saline County. That's pretty much near the center of the state. And my mother, she's from England, and my father had met her during World War II. My older brother was born over there, and I was born in Kansas City.
One of those war romance stories, huh?
It was a war romance stories. One where they could watch the dogfights and the V1 buzz bombs and all that.
Wow.
My grandparents moved from central Missouri during World War II to work at the plants up here, war plants, and they bought a farm about 30 miles south of Kansas City, about 1 mile from the Kansas state line. Of course, it's in Missouri, and I spent a lot of weekends as a kid and a lot of weeks during the summer with my grandparents. and that's where I picked up what you might call a little Southern heritage from a grandmother.
Well, great. Well, tell us how you became interested in the war between the states, and in particular in the subject of Joe Shelby's Iron Brigade.
All righty, and I'm going to have to blame somebody for this. I'm going to blame my grandmother. It's all her fault.
Well, now we know who's responsible.
Yeah, you can blame her. When I was a kid, me and my two brothers, I've got one older, one younger, and then one that came along 13 years after, my youngest brother. But the three of us older ones, we used to go down to the farm, and we'd spend our days, you know, following my grandfather around as he did his farm chores.
Yes, sir.
And when we kind of wore out doing that, we'd be in the house, and every once in a while, my grandmother would get this idea that we ought to know something about the family history. And on a few occasions, she'd drag out this picture of her grandfather, who she had never met because he died in 1884.
Wow.
But she was just awful proud of him. And she'd bring out that picture, and she'd bring out a little 22 caliber Derringer she swore he carried during the Civil War, and that one time he could see blood stains on the handle from when he'd been wounded during the war.
Mm.
Now, how true that is, I don't know.
Wow. It makes for a good story, especially when you're a kid listening, I'm sure.
That's right. That's how she got our attention. And what she did was she'd tell us, you know, little stories about this guy, and she didn't have very many stories. But the kind of story she would tell was that he'd been wounded during the war, and that his comrades had taken him to an old grist mill and left him there. And then afterwards, some northern girls had found him, and they nursed him back to health. And then when he was well, he was sent to a federal prison where he stayed until the end of the war. Now, that was the biggest story, the one that really caught our attention.
Yeah.
And then she told a few other stories that didn't quite make sense until I saw his service record years later.
Mm-hmm.
She used to say he fought at the Battle of Lone Jack, which is up here in Jackson County, Missouri, where Kansas, east of the county that Kansas City's in.
Okay.
It's the same county, it's just on the east side.
Right.
And she also said one time that sometimes he'd change out of his Confederate uniform and put on a Union uniform.
Huh.
And I thought, wow, that's real odd.
Yeah.
But later I discovered it wasn't odd at all. And suddenly, all those stories started making more sense as I got into this. So my interest in the Civil War, well, you can blame my grandmother, all right?
Well, that's amazing. So you started with those stories, and how did you come to find out that he was actually a part of the Iron Brigade?
Okay. Now, the way that really got started was she planted a seed in my mind. When I was probably in my early 20s, I guess she thought maybe I might look into something like that. She wrote out the family history of her grandfather's family, this fellow that had been in the Confederate Army. And she handed that thing to me. I remember reading the battles he was in, and I recall reading that his commanders had been someone called General Shelby and Colonel Gordon. And I had this helpless feeling. I didn't know who those people were. I didn't have a clue where to look. And I just sort of let it go. And so for years, I just didn't know. I didn't make any connection at all between this fellow and Shelby's brigade. But that changed one day. I'd gone up to this library with my wife, and she likes to research genealogy. And I was a little bored, so I was going through the library in Northeast Independence, looking through the stacks, and I picked up a book, and it was called Battles and Leaders of the Civil War. Well, I got looking through there, and all of a sudden I'm looking at a at this name of a battle, Prairie Deanne, Arkansas. And it just clicked. Well, heck, my grandma's grandpa had been in that battle because it was in that letter she'd handed me years back. And that was what I call my oh wow moment. that's when I was hooked.
And that's when it became personal, isn't it?
Well, I couldn't believe that he'd actually been in a battle that was in a book. It just floored me. So I started talking to the librarians, and they started talking about something called the Iron Brigade. And I couldn't imagine that he'd been in anything called an Iron Brigade. And I really couldn't accept that fact for a long time. But finally, yeah, Colonel Gordon's regiment was part of General Joe Shelby's Iron Brigade. I just had to admit it.
Wow. That took you right.
Serious research.
Took you right back to those feelings you had, I'm sure, when you first heard those stories from your grandmother.
It sure did. And having brothers, of course, you share all this, and when you swap these stories with each other that about the information you're finding, it just kind of motivates you to keep on going. And it did. And so.
Well, that's great. Now, how in the world do you go about researching a story about a brigade like this?
Well,
particularly one where you know that it's they've been referred to as guerrillas by the other side, so there may or may not be accurate records to some degree.
Well, it didn't begin with me wanting to research this brigade. That's where it ended up. It started out personal.
Mm-hmm.
And I was interested just in my grandpa and what he'd done, or my grandmother's grandfather. And so I ordered his service record, and I got looking around in the family history a little bit, and I found out he had two brothers that had also been in that same regiment. In fact, the same company, but at different times than he had. And so I ordered pension applications they had submitted. There's a Confederate home at Higginsville, Missouri, where the old veterans would go if they were indigent at the end of their lives. In fact, one of this old fellow's brothers had died there and is buried at the Higginsville Confederate Memorial. So, but anyway, I got looking into that. And I got looking at old newspapers, and I finally decided, well, I'll try to write a history of Gordon's regiment. And so I started looking at all the secondary sources I could, and I gathered up a bunch of secondary sources. And what I realized after I'd written it all up was it wasn't really that good. And so what I did was I took the part about the relatives in the war, and I wrote a little book and self-published it for the relatives and to let the people at work read it. It was called Saline County Soldier. And in there I discussed the guerrilla war. And because these three brothers had been in Shelby's brigade at different times, I had found the basic battles, the big battles Shelby's brigade had been in. So I realized, heck, I've got the outline of a book about Shelby's brigade.
Yeah.
And I discovered that you couldn't write about a regiment because these regiments fought together and pieces of them would go out. And so you really had to speak of the brigade to write about them.
Wow.
So in 1983, not really knowing how to go about this, I wrote a letter to a fellow called Albert Castell. And most folks who know about the Civil War west of the Mississippi, and he's done work on the war east of the Mississippi, in fact, that may be some of his best work, would know who Albert Castell is. He's a prominent historian. He'd been a professor at the University of Michigan, and he'd written a book called General Sterling Price and the Civil War. And that was the very best book I'd found on the Civil War west of the Mississippi that involved Shelby's Brigade. So I wrote him a letter, and I told him, hey, I'm thinking about writing a book about General Shelby's Brigade. And because I remember he had referred to Shelby's Brigade as perhaps the best cavalry unit in the West. And that had got my attention. That's why I wrote him.
Yeah.
Well, I was shocked when he replied because I really didn't expect him to reply. I was just having a wild moment and thought, well, I'll just write this guy and see if he does respond. Well, he did. And he wrote me a real nice letter, and he told me what problems I'd have trying to write a book like that. And mostly, there's a lack of first-hand account west of the Mississippi with the soldiers that had been in Shelby's brigade. Like you said, the information was scarce as hen's teeth.
Wow.
And it proved to be the fact. But he told me what I needed to do. He told me I needed to order the records from the National Archives for Shelby's brigade and get census records and look at county histories and the old newspapers and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what I did.
Wow.
Now, I was lucky because I was working downtown Kansas City, about a block from the Kansas City Library. And they had a wonderful set of information down there in a place called the Missouri Valley Room. So on my lunch breaks, I'd go in there, and every day, pretty much, I'd go looking through microfilm, or I'd copy something out of, say, the Confederate Veteran Magazine or whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years, I kind of exhausted the information I could really find about Shelby's Brigade. So in the end, I organized it all by battles that they'd fought in chronological order, and I just started writing. And that's kind of what got me to finally having finished the first draft. And that was in 1999. See, I started when I was at the Northeast Independence Library when I first heard about Shelby's Brigade. It was 1977.
Wow.
So you can see this went over a long time.
22 years.
Yeah, but I just kept at it. I didn't lose interest. And I really researched the official records of the rebellion, where the officers' reports and the correspondence and all that was. And what I ended up doing was writing a chapter based upon each of their battles. And I tried to include as much of the first-hand information that I could find. But it was scarce, but I found enough to come up with the story. And so I got a manuscript together, and I sent a letter to Dr. Castell once again. And once again, he totally surprised me. He called me up. He said, send that manuscript. I'll look at it. So heck, I did. And in about his amazingly short time, it's less than 2 weeks, he sent it back to me. And he had these notes on there. He said, too much detail, too much about too little. and once again, he sent me a nice letter, and he told me what I needed to do to rewrite that manuscript. So I just took his advice to heart, and I started rewriting it, and then I retired from my job, and 2003, I'd worked for the government for since 1978, and finally, since I was retired, I could finally really seriously rewrite it, and I found out it was a bigger job than I ever dreamed of, but I finally got it done, and managed to get it published.
Wow. Well, it certainly looks like you've, over the course of 20-some-odd years, putting all that research into it, it definitely... The book reads like it is truly a definitive work on the Iron Brigade. I can't imagine that anyone would have been able to find any more information than what you put into the book. It's obvious that a great deal of time and personal interest went into the book itself. You know, by the way, Daryl, that since you have been so kind in talking about the fellow that gave you... a little bit of help along the way in getting your first book going now. You're probably going to have authors writing you and wanting the same from you at some point, too.
Well, that'd be fair, wouldn't it?
That would be. Folks, we are talking tonight here on this Pelican Pages segment with Daryl Selmayr, who is the author of a brand new book from Pelican Publishing entitled Joe Shelby's Iron Brigade. And this is a book that you can take a look at there on the Pelican website at epelican.com. And it goes in tremendous detail about the actual battles and the men and their lives that made up the Iron Brigade. Well, we're going to come back in just a minute after this short break, and we're going to talk about the actual brigade itself, some of the battles that they did fight in. And Daryl, maybe you can give us just a glimpse into these men's lives that are so famous across the South for being heroes. And we'll give the folks out there just a little bit of a taste of it to whet their appetite a little bit. How does that sound?
Well, that's fine. Of course, this is a unit history of a brigade, but with maybe 4,000 men that have been in the brigade from first to last, you sort of have to concentrate on the principal officers.
Right.
And naturally, that would be General Joe Shelby. But he also had some other great officers under him. He had a fellow named Colonel Benjamin Elliott, and he was an 1851 graduate of the Virginia Military Institute.
Well, don't give them too much information.
Right.
Make them wait till after the break.
All right.
Folks, we'll be back in just a minute. Here now is a song from Robert Lloyd, one of the favorite artists in the Southern Movement, and one of his most requested songs here at Dixie Broadcasting, entitled The Gray Ghost of Heaven. It's been more than a decade since The South Was Right by the Kennedy Brothers first went into print. Now, 100,000 copies plus later, it's still a bestseller. And what about Michael Grissom's Southern by the Grace of God even before that? Both works have been huge successes in rekindling the fires of our Southernness in the hearts of readers all across Dixie. And both share something else in common along with hundreds of other Southern works. Both are published by the only major pro-Southern publishing house in America, Pelican Publishing. Under the visionary work of Dr. Milburn Calhoun, Pelican Publishing has spent the last 37 years returning to its roots in providing Southern authors an alternative to Northern publishing houses. So whether you're an author looking for someone to publish your own manuscript, or you're just interested in reading a good book, go to epelican.com today and browse around. You'll find books on a huge number of topics, Southern and beyond, as well as a friendly staff who know how to support Southern authors in getting their works out to the public. Pelican Publishing, giving us all a better choice. Visit us today at epelican.com. All right, welcome back to another Pelican Pages segment here at Dixie Broadcasting. And we are talking tonight with Daryl Selmayr, who is the author of Joe Shelby's Iron Brigade. You can take a look at that on the Pelican website at epelican.com. Type in the title of the book, Joe Shelby's Iron Brigade, or part of that title will work for you, and you'll be able to pull it up. You can actually purchase a copy of this book on the Pelican website while we're on the interview at a reduced price, so I encourage you to take a look at that. You can also find this book, Daryl, I'm guessing, at probably just about any major bookstore across America, and if they don't have it on the shelf, they can probably have it there in about 2 or 3 days.
Oh, yeah. The bookstores will order the book for you. I know Barnes & Noble carries it, and most border stores will. But most any bookstore would order it for you. Plus, it's in a variety of places on the internet, as well as, you know, of course, epelican.com.
Well, Daryl, tell us. I know we want to talk a little bit about Joe Shelby himself, but these men that made up the Iron Brigade, some of them had, prior to joining the Iron Brigade officially, they had been conducting guerrilla warfare against the Yankees there in the Trans-Mississippi Theater. Tell us a little bit about that, and then maybe tell us a little bit about Joe Shelby himself.
All righty. As far as the guerrilla thing, to put it in perspective, you know, when the war began, the state legislature of Missouri had organized Missouri State Guard, And at the beginning of the war, the Missouri State Guard fought the federal forces in Missouri. They fought them at Carthage, which was one battle, and then the recognizable battle was the Battle of Wilson's Creek. And then they besieged Lexington, Missouri.
Now, was that under the command of Sterling Price at that time?
General Sterling Price.
Okay.
He was the major general who was in charge of the Missouri State Guard. There were 8 military districts, and he was the leader of those 8 of 8 brigadier generals, one from each district. And he was a popular figure in Missouri. And he'd won his early battles, of course, Wilson's Creek, Carthage, and Lexington.
Mm-hmm.
But then, of course, the weight of numbers too much for the Confederates, or really the Missouri State Guardsmen, we could say. And they were pushed back into Arkansas. And General Price and his troops fought at the Battle of Pea Ridge, and as we all know, the South lost that battle. And after that, that's a time when you do start seeing more guerrilla warfare. And a thing happened in Missouri. General Schofield, he sent out a death order for guerrillas in Missouri. If they were captured, they were to be killed. And that really stimulated guerrilla warfare in Missouri, to say the least.
I bet.
And this goes into the creation of Shelby's Brigade, because by the time General Joe Shelby came to recruit in Missouri, 2 orders had been issued. One was General Order Number 19, which required all men of military age capable of bearing arms to join the Union militia in Missouri. Mm. And the other was General Order Number 24, which came about shortly thereafter, which required all disloyal people and secessionist sympathizers to report to the nearest military post and turn in their weapons. Well, that sent a lot of young Southern men to the brush with the guerrillas.
Now, this was also about the same time that Jesse James and his family were getting involved. Is that right?
Well, Frank James, for sure. I won't say too much about Jesse. I think he was a youngster. And you're probably right about that. Of course, by 1864, he was definitely in the war with Bloody Bill, they called him Bloody Bill Anderson, his Captain Anderson's group in North Missouri.
Yes, sir.
But this gets us back to your question, or to having a few words about General Shelby. Just to let people know where he came from. He was born in Lexington, Kentucky in December of 1830. And he attended Transylvania University there. And so when he was about 19 or 20 years old, by the time he had obtained a pretty good education, and he immigrated to Missouri, and he worked at he operated a rope factory. They call it a rope walk. And him and a stepbrother operated a large farm in Missouri, you know, that used slaves. And then about 1855, after the Kansas-Nebraska Act was passed, Shelby supported the pro-slavery faction that went into Kansas and tried to help the Kansas immigrants vote Kansas Territory into the Union as a slave state. Of course, the abolitionist movement, they had their own ideas about Kansas, and after quite a bit of controversy, they had more numbers than Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Kansas, by 1861, entered the Union as a, you know, as a free state. But Shelby had gone in over there and been part of that controversy. And so when the war broke out, Shelby went back to Lexington, Kentucky. And, he had raised a company of cavalry during the Kansas period and taken them into Kansas. So he was very active at that time, and then when the war did break out, he raised the cavalry company at his own expense in Lafayette County, Missouri, and his hometown was Waverly. And Shelby had fought in the early battles of the Missouri State Guard at Wilson Creek, Carthage, Lexington, and at Pea Ridge. Him and Shelby's Rangers, that's what they're called, distinguished themselves. And, Shelby gained recognition quickly. But by June of 1862, his enlistment in the Missouri State Guard had expired, and he took his company back across the Mississippi River because they had gone into Mississippi for a while and to help General Price, who had taken command of an infantry, actually, I think, two brigades of infantry over there. So, but he decided to go back in west of the river and to go in Missouri and raise a regiment of cavalry. Well, he was given a commission to do that. And he went up into Missouri with a force under a fellow named Colonel Bard Cockrell. And at the time he got up here to Missouri, all this commotion about General Order Number 19 and 24, which was forcing Missourians to take sides, was happening. So it was the perfect time to raise a regiment of cavalry. And in 4 days, he raised a regiment on the Missouri River. Most of the troops came from Lafayette County, and three companies of that regiment came from the county just east, Saline County. That's where my grandparents and my dad, you know, that was their county, eventually. But basically, Shelby had his hands full right then. Two federal forces were converging on western Missouri because there had been a battle at Lone Jack and a battle of Independence, Missouri. And the Confederate recruiters had successfully defeated the federal forces at both those battles. So these two large federal forces pursued Cockrell's men had been in these battles south to southwest Missouri. These guys pretty much had to ride for their lives to get out of the state. Shelby was rather smart, and he followed the Federals and finally made his way back to into Arkansas, where he received an order to report to a fellow named General Raines. Well, so Shelby took his regiment and reported to General Raines at Pineville, Missouri. And while he was there, General Hindman, who was Confederate commander of the Confederate forces west of Mississippi at that time, placed General Shelby, or Colonel Shelby at that time, in command of a brigade that consisted of the regiment he just recruited and a regiment that had been recruited in Jackson County, which is, of course, the county that Kansas City, Missouri is in now. That had been recruited by a colonel named Colonel Upton Hayes. And then he also put him in charge of a regiment had been raised primarily in southwest Missouri by an officer named Colonel John T. Coffey. And I noticed on your website there's a Colonel John T. Coffey, son of the Confederate Veterans Chapter that
yes.
supports you.
Yeah, there sure is, and they're actually one of the most active SCV camps anywhere across Dixie.
Yes, and good old Colonel Coffey was the fellow that recruited that regiment for General Shelby.
Mm.
So we have a connection there, don't
yeah,
we?
That's great.
Yeah. So anyway, that was the start of Shelby's Brigade. It was formally organized on September 12, 1862. And
so,
most of the officers, they'd been in the war during the Missouri State Guard days. And, some of the men probably had some experience as guerrillas out of necessity because of this, because the Federals were forcing Southern men often against their will into the Missouri militia.
Mm-hmm.
And so, now there would be other guerrilla connections because later Quantrell's guerrillas would be attached to Shelby's brigade at times, at least a couple of times, and they would fight together, in fact.
And all this is going on while Shelby is actually a very young man in his early 30s.
Yes. Shelby's a very junior officer. To this point, he had only been a captain. But he very quickly, distinguished himself. And he had to rise from the ranks, as you will, and make a name for himself, and he certainly did that.
Well, Darrell, tell us, if you would, about maybe a couple of the major engagements that the Iron Brigade was involved in and what their role was.
All righty. Let me kind of preface it with this. You can kind of break their whole career into about three stages. In 1862, they fought two major battles. One was at Newtonia, only 3 weeks after they'd been organized, on September 30th, and that was a Confederate victory.
That's not a bad way to get things started.
they learned early on they could defeat a federal force. And then on December 7th of 1862, they're in another major battle. Now, they're not by themselves when I say battles. I mean, this is, in this case, General Hindman brought the infantry up to Prairie Grove, Arkansas, and tried to attack a large federal force. And he only had enough ammunition for one day, and the battle did last the day.
Hmm.
And so he had to retreat, but that was the situation where Shelby's brigade distinguished themselves in that battle early on. So that was 1862 was their formative year, you might say. And then on their muster rolls, they talk about themselves as they talk about the troops as behaving like veterans. You know, when in actuality, most of the rank and file had not been in the service before.
Hmm.
These were the moderate Missourians who had wanted to sit out the war, be neutral, but they could not bring themselves to fight their Southern brethren. And so when they were forced to choose, they chose the South.
Wow.
Now, the interesting part is a lot of those men actually were born in the North, but they saw the right and wrong of the situation, and they went with their conscience. And that's an interesting thing about Shelby's case.
And these men, obviously, they're the picture of a frontiersman. They're men that are not by any means new to having to take care of themselves and their families, and I guess that's why they became so quickly accustomed to being involved in the war there, even though they were not veterans by length of time.
Well, they were, sort of a cross-section of the people living in Missouri. and there weren't many plantations in Missouri, although along the Missouri River there were large farms that had slaves. Mostly these were farm boys, just tough farm boys, and you know, think about it like that. And so when you say frontiersmen, they were sort of a lot of the people that would make kind of breaking in new land, you might say, the land that hadn't been ever farmed before. So in that sense,
yes,
I agree with what you're saying, you see. They were these tough kids. So they were good material from the start. And a fellow named Thomas L. Snead, who wrote The Fight for Missouri, I believe he was General Price's adjutant, he wrote in that book that when he first saw Shelby's brigade, they struck him as fine a body of young fellows as ever fought under any flag. He was just real impressed with them at the time he saw them. And so Shelby had managed to recruit these men, most of whom were in their early 20s. I went through the prison records and looked at 100 of them where they'd been captured, and they gave their physical description. Their average height was actually 5'9" tall. They were taller than your average man at the time. He just sort of went in there and got the cream of the crop. So he had some good material to work with. And now their next period is they really become soldiers in the year 1863. And in this year, in the dead of winter, Shelby he participated in an invasion of Missouri under General Marmaduke. Marmaduke had distinguished himself at the Battle of Shiloh. He'd been wounded and promoted for bravery. He'd been sent west, but essentially he was more an infantry officer than a cavalry officer.
Mm-hmm.
And this fact shows up repeatedly when Shelby's brigade's in a fight. Marmaduke has a way of not going for the throat, you might say, when he's attacking fortifications and the like. He's very considerate of the lives of his men. And that's a good thing, and his men loved him for it, but it didn't really help in battlefield success. But in this year, it was sort of a year of reverses. Shelby's brigade distinguished themselves, however, in this first battle they were in when they attacked Springfield, Missouri, in the dead of winter. And there was a correspondent from the New York Times there watching the battle. And Shelby's brigade had taken a fortification, a stockade, and they captured an artillery piece at Springfield. And but the battle had raged all day. It was cold, and these troops really didn't have winter clothing. Most of them only had the clothes they brought from their home, and some of them only had the clothes on their back, so they weren't equipped for winter.
Mm.
And so Marmaduke had decided that they would move on, which they did. But a correspondent for the New York Times had been there, and he wrote about the battle, and he referred to the three regiments of Shelby's brigade by name and referred to them as the flower of the Missouri rebels. So right away they got some recognition, see, all the way into New York. But 1862 was this year reverses, and the following few days, Marmaduke had led his men into ambush at the Battle of Hartville, Missouri. And Shelby's brigade lost about 13 officers killed and wounded when they were ambushed, you know, with the captain standing in front of the regiments or in front of the companies in their line of battle. And although the Confederates, Shelby's brigade in particular, did a good job of standing their ground, it'd be hard to call that one a victory, because finally the Federals did slip away.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they had their losses, but not as many. But where we really see Shelby's brigade distinguished themselves just in the fall of 1863, it's called Shelby's Raid. And at this time, a federal army of 12,000 men under General Frederick Steele had captured Little Rock, capital of Arkansas. And, of course, the Confederate Army in Arkansas was just dispirited over this. And General Shelby, or he was still Colonel Shelby proposed a daring raid into Missouri. And his intention was to hold General Steele's forces at Little Rock by getting behind his lines and creating havoc. And to keep him there until the winter, because Steele was in the perfect position to go ahead, advance into southern Arkansas, and garrison all the main towns, and pretty much occupy Arkansas and win it for the Union.
Mm-hmm.
But Shelby proposed taking 600 picked men from his brigade and to raid Missouri, and like I said, to raise all the havoc he could. And his superiors were desperate. And even though they expressed the opinion that he would be either killed or captured, they permitted him to go. So Shelby and his men went on a raid that would span just about, if you were using modern highways, 1,000 miles.
Wow.
And they left Arkadelphia, Arkansas, I think it's on September 21st, 1863. And they captured 180 Union militia at Neosho, Missouri, and they advanced north, and they were tearing up the railroad and capturing little militia garrisons and burning their fortifications and whatnot, and cutting the telegraph line to keep the Federals from knowing where they were and communicating. And he did this all the way up to Marshall, Missouri, which is in Saline County, right up near the Missouri River. And at that point, a federal force under General Edgar Brown, who had been the commander at Springfield, managed to get enough men together to encircle Shelby's raiders. And the dust cover of this book has a nice painting done by a fellow named Andy Thomas, and it's called The Charge of Shelby's Iron Brigade. And it shows a picture of Shelby's men charging through the federal lines, cutting their way out. And there's old Shelby with his arm in a sling, because he'd been wounded at the Battle of Helena on July 4th in a battle. And the painting's a good, accurate painting. And,
yeah, it's a great painting. I've actually been looking at it during the entire interview tonight. It's a great, great painting.
Right, and I'll give a plug to Andy here. That's his studio is Maze Creek Studio, and you can see his paintings at andythomas.com on the internet. And I'm sure Andy'd be just happy to sell you print.
Yes, sir.
I'm sure he would.
Well, we'll encourage all the listeners to go take a look at Andy's website then, because this is a tremendous painting, and I'm sure if he has any others that are similar, they're just as good.
Yeah, he's got a battle of Shelby and his men at Westport painting that's excellent. I've got both of them in my room here, and I'm looking at them. I love them.
Well, Daryl, we're running close on time here.
All right.
Tell us, how did Shelby's Iron Brigade gain the nickname the Iron Brigade?
Well, I'll tell you what. In this way, they're a little bit like the Kentucky Orphan Brigade, okay? This was a name given to them after the war.
Really?
Yes. During the war, the name Shelby's Brigade would have carried the same weight, you know?
Right.
Everybody knew who Shelby's Brigade was, and they knew it after the war as well. But Shelby had an adjutant called John Newman Edwards. And Edwards wrote a book called Shelby and His Men. And in that book, he promoted, actively promoted General Shelby's experiences during the war. And that's the first instance I'd ever seen any actual record of anybody calling this brigade the Iron Brigade. Yet, every historian since the Civil War, since 1867, who writes about this brigade or talks about it, they will call it the Iron Brigade. So it was a name that stuck. It's kind of like the Kentucky Orphan Brigade. And they got their name after the war, when at their reunions, they had called themselves orphans because they had no place to go back home, being in Kentucky at times.
Wow.
So it's just another instance of that. But had they never called them anything but Shelby's Brigade, it would have been good enough.
Well, Darryl,
because that name was established.
From your perspective as the author of the book, what was the most interesting part of the book to you?
Most interesting part to me was when General Shelby was sent across the Arkansas River in the summer of 1864 to operate behind General Steele's line. General Steele had been defeated in during the Red River campaign. In fact, the whole Federal Army had been by the Confederate forces during the Red River campaign. The Federals had tried to capture Shreveport, Louisiana, and they'd failed due to good Confederate infantry. The battle was, I think, at Pleasant Hill and Mansfield. And Shelby's brigade had played their part in delaying Steele's advance. And after Steele was sent packing back to Little Rock, Shelby was sent to operate behind his lines, which is north of the Arkansas River. Now, you would think, with all the Federal forces in Missouri to the north, and all the Federals in Arkansas at Little Rock and Duval's Bluff, and what the Federals have in access to the Indian Territory to the west and to the rivers with their tin-clad gunboats, Shelby wouldn't have had a chance of operating in northeast Arkansas, but he certainly did. And during his time there, he not only managed to keep from being captured, his troops and him attacked a Federal gunboat by slipping up on this gunboat. It was called the Queen City at night. And they rolled their guns up during the middle of the night toward this gunboat that was anchored. You know, they had those huge guns on those gunboats.
Yeah.
And right before dawn, they opened up on this gunboat and disabled it and forced it to surrender, and they blew it up. And that was a pretty amazing thing. But the most amazing thing was that General Steele's forces could never find Shelby in the about four months that he was in North Arkansas. And the perennial question that would arise when you read the Federal correspondence is, where is Shelby? They can't find him. And yet, during this whole time, he's raising recruits in Arkansas. And he was given orders to conscript all men of military age, and he did. And the other order he had was to suppress the banditry that was going on in northern Arkansas. The Federals couldn't keep order in northern Arkansas.
They
but
couldn't
Shelby
even
was sent in there.
Yeah, they couldn't even keep order in their own ranks, let alone anybody else.
Right. What was happening is the citizens were being robbed by bands of deserters from both armies and by Union guerrillas called Mountain Boomers. And Shelby was sent in there with orders to shoot down any parties of men that were committing depredations against the citizens of Arkansas. And he had the right men to do that job. And they did. And they quickly reestablished order in northeast Arkansas.
Wow.
And so finally the citizens, and the citizens really appreciated that.
I can imagine so. Probably.
Yeah, and Shelby
won popular support.
What's that?
I'm sure that helped to win the popular support of the folks that were still there.
It did. They became enthusiastic Confederates after Shelby got up there and reestablished some peace for those folks. And during this time, the amazing part was he raised 8,000 men for Confederate service by recruiting and by conscripting men of military age. And when General Price invaded Missouri in the fall of 1864 in his great raid, 2/3 of his army were men that Shelby had either recruited or conscripted while he was in northeast Arkansas, right under General Steele's nose.
We could use his recruiting efforts today for the Southern movement.
Well, he was very successful.
Wow.
And part of the reason he was that his men had become expert soldiers in the time they'd been in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
And they were great scouts. And every time the Federals would send out scouting parties, Shelby scouts would meet them. And so that left Steele with having very little to rely on but rumors and reports of spies. And Shelby's men made a habit of giving out false information to some of the citizens. And then some of these citizens would report that back to General Steele. And General Steele didn't have any good information to go on.
That's great.
So he kept General Steele in the dark all the time.
That's great. Now, Darryl, we're about out of time here, but I know we've mentioned Andy Thomas, the artist who did the dust jacket of the book, and it's a beautiful painting. Is there anybody else that you want to mention as far as contributing to the book that you put together for us here?
Well, there probably should be a lot of people. Of course, I have to thank Dr. Castell. I got some good photos from the folks in the state of Missouri through the Wilcox boys. He's noticed one of them looks like he's wearing a gorilla shirt, which maybe tells you a little bit of something.
Yeah.
There's some things going on up here. There's going to be a great big Civil War reenactment. Let's see, May 14th, 16th through 18th. If anybody's interested in knowing about it, it's at www.standofcolors.org. And they expect to have 1,500 local and national reenactors.
Wow.
Reenact the Battle of Westport, which Shelby's brigade was the last unit off the field during that fight. And they were kind of ran off the field, but in the end they fought their way off of it too.
Mm.
So that was a big moment for them. And then Waverly, Missouri is General Shelby's hometown. And they've kind of embraced General Joe. And they have created a General Joe Shelby's Iron Brigade Association. And they're going to have a big event in June. I think it's June 28th and 29th. And if anybody's interested in things going on in Waverly, they might want to visit the Waverly Arts website. That's an organization that promotes this sort of thing. It's at www.waverlyarts.org. And they got some nice pictures, reenactment of General Shelby's wedding they'd done last year. And there's some other good, interesting photographs people might want to look at.
Now,
of good information on the site.
Now, do you have any other book signings or speaking engagements coming up that you can tell us about?
Yes, May 31st. I'll be speaking with the Barnes & Noble bookstore from 1 to 3 p.m. In Independence, Missouri. They're right by the Independence Shopping Center across the street on 39th Street. And then on June 29th, I'll be speaking to the General Joe Shelby's Iron Brigade organization, telling them about the book. And that'll be about 10 o'clock.
And now, obviously, this is a Pelican Pages segment. I always like to ask our authors, because we always hear interesting things when I ask this. How did you choose Pelican as the publishing company for the book on the Iron Brigade?
Well, the reason I did was because people kept saying to me, why don't you send that manuscript to Pelican? And the first person to say that to me was Dina Thomas, and she's Andy Thomas's wife and office manager. And, you know, Dina suggested I submit the manuscript either to Pelican or a small publisher senior in California. At first, I tried the small publisher. He's an excellent fellow, nice fellow. He wanted to publish the book, but we couldn't really come to terms with this being a small press and all. And he suggested that I try Pelican. So I had two people there who were knowledgeable, telling me to try Pelican. And Dina's husband, Andy, had also painted a cover for a book called Civil War in the Ozarks Pelican had put out.
Mm-hmm.
It's another one of his good paintings. And so she'd had experience with them. And so I said, shoot, why not? So I sent a query letter to Pelican, and then they wanted to see the manuscript, and by golly, they wanted it.
Right.
So I was very happy about that.
Well, Pelican has certainly done more than any other publishing house I'm familiar with in putting out books about the war, particularly books from the southern side. And they do a tremendous job also, I know, in promoting the books more than a lot of publishers do nowadays.
Yeah, they turned out some great Civil War books, and I know I buy them. And, there's a couple of Civil War Missouri, on the Missouri-Kansas border I read recently, and a book on Nathan Bedford Forrest, both Pelican books, both excellent. I enjoy them myself.
Well,
sure
good.
Do.
Now, Daryl, do you have any other works that are in the works right now?
Actually, what I'm doing now is playing cleanup on this book. I had spent years going through the records and making day-by-day accounts of the casualties. The men that... deserted, the men that were sick, the men that died, and all these other types of lists from brigade records.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel compelled to get that all on a computer and perhaps someday compile that for each man like some of the other Pelican officers, authors have. Whether it ever be a book, I don't know, but it's something I'm doing just so that someone besides myself can have it someday.
And I have no doubt there are more than one person that would love to be able to have access to that information, especially after all the time you put into that.
Yeah, it's been literally thousands of hours, and I hate for it to be thrown in the trash someday. So
sure.
I'm gonna do my best to preserve it.
Well, that's tremendous. Folks, we've been talking to Daryl Selmayr tonight on this Pelican Pages segment about his book with Pelican entitled Joe Shelby's Iron Brigade. It is almost 400 pages and has to be the definitive work on Joe Shelby's Iron Brigade there in the Trans-Mississippi Theater. And Daryl, I just want to thank you for being on the program with us tonight. It's been a great learning experience for me, and just an exciting story about this particular aspect of the war.
Well, thank you very much. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Well, folks, you can find out more about this book. You can take a look at a summary of the book and actually purchase it at a reduced price online at the Pelican website by going to epelican.com and type in the title or part of the title. That's Joe Shelby's Iron Brigade. And you can put the author's name in there, too. It's Daryl Selmayr, D-E-R-Y-L, Selmayr, S-E-L-L-M-E-Y-E-R. And I hope you'll take a look at this book. It makes for tremendous reading, particularly for those many of us in the Southern Movement who enjoy reading about the history of our heroes from the South, and particularly during the war. Makes for great reading. We've got plenty more music coming up tonight here on Dixie Broadcasting, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
They have published some of the most well-known authors in the Southern Movement, from the Kennedy brothers to Jimmy Cantrell. Pelican Publishing Company has an incredibly diverse library of over 1,300 titles to their credit, with about 60 new titles published annually. If you like books about history, literature, humor, Cajun cooking, travel, or just about anything else, Pelican's website, ePelican.com, is the place for you. With online catalogs and secure online shopping, it's never been easier to tap into the wealth of knowledge and reading pleasure that Pelican has to offer. At ePelican.com, you can browse all of the Pelican's titles and shop for just the right book for yourself or a gift for someone else. Treat yourself today. Visit ePelican.com. That website again, ePelican.com.